Well, Anuradhi, thank you. Do you notice how my cheeks are getting more and more pink, or were getting more and more pink as she said all these lovely things? Thank you, it was very kind of you. And it is true that my door is open, so please don't hesitate. I've lived for a long time, and I've been in the movement for a very long time. And it was terribly difficult to decide, well, what bits would I do? Because if you wanted my life story, as it were, we'd all be sound asleep in no time. And I just wanted to pick out things that might interest you, and things that I enjoyed very much. And I thought, well, how can I pick things out from my life in the movement, in the order? How can I do that? And then I thought, well, I started in Glasgow. I was born in Glasgow in Scotland. And many, many years later, I went to India for a very short time, but it was an amazing experience for me. So I thought I'd tell you a little bit about that. And then the last one is London, where I've been living now for a long time. So, there was a funny thing my mother told me when I was about 5 years old. And we were visiting, and there was a thing on the mantelpiece of the room we were in, where we were, seeing a lot of my parents' friends and so on. And I kept looking at this thing, and it was a big fat Buddha, you know, the big fat Buddha, the Buddha of plenty. And one of the men said, Do you like that? That's the Buddha. And I said, no, that's not the Buddha. So where I got that from, I don't know. My mother puzzled over it for a long, long time. But I really had a feeling of something that I wanted in my life. And my mother used to say, you've got that faraway look, as though you're wanting something. And, you know, I said, yes, I want something, but I don't know what it is. And maybe that's what it was, seeing a real Buddha or knowing what the Buddha was really like. So, when I was in my 30s, I came across Chogyam Trungpa. You possibly know of his name. He came to the borders between England and Scotland many years ago and set up San Yiling. And I had read one or two books about Buddhism. They weren't very, very good, or didn't explain what I was wanting to know. And I thought, well, why don't I find out from this Buddhist who is coming to live at San Yiling? So I went down to in a car, a friend's car, to meet this man. And I met him. He was quite a character, he really was. And he settled in there very well. He had another of his friends with him, Akong, and he gave lectures and taught meditation. So we went down, and it was a very interesting place, and everybody was very friendly, and we were sitting in the shrine room, and he said, now we're going to meditate. So we all waited to see what we were supposed to do, and there were two ladies behind me. They were much older than me at that time, and one of them said, what have we to do, dear? And the other one said, I don't know. And really, it was just sitting that we were doing, but he didn't say anything about it. So we were all sitting there, very perturbed and, you know, not at all ready for being ready to meditate. However, he then decided to come to Glasgow to give talks. He gave lectures, and then we all meditated. And we still didn't know very much about what meditation actually was. So we just did the just sitting for quite some time. And in that group, there were about five regulars. He came up something like once every 2 weeks and gave a lecture in he hired a room and gave a lecture. And we got to like him, he was, you know, he had a beautiful Oxford accent, because when he came from Tibet, he first went to Oxford, and I think was in one of the colleges, and he picked up this beautiful accent, which was really very nice indeed, but he had a lot of fun in him as well. Anyway, the people who the regulars, we began to talk to one another in between times, and we decided that we would come together in my house and meet and talk about Buddhism and any questions we might have for Trungpa and so on. And we got to know each other very well. In fact, in time, we called ourselves the Glasgow Buddhist Group. And we met, we didn't know very much, but I was asked by people who were in Sammy Ling, some of the people who came to the things that I was going to, and they started to say, when are you going to ask Trungpa to go for refuge, to be ordained, in fact? And I sort of, you know, drew back. I said, no, not yet. And I Trungpa was lovely, and I liked him a lot, but somehow he wasn't my teacher, I felt. And something happened just after that. One of the people who became the Glasgow Buddhist Group said to me, my husband has got a tape of a man who's just come from India. He's an Englishman, and it's a talk about the Dharma. And it was Bhante Sangharakshita. And I heard this man speaking, and I thought, my teacher has come. And he lived in London, and I phoned up to find out if I could come round and ask him something. I didn't feel that I could write a letter to a man of this. He was so, he was so beautifully in tune with what I wanted to hear. And I thought, I'll come in and ask him if he'll come and talk to us. And I came down, I was all put on all my best things to. And when I was very late, because I had walked there, and it was miles and miles and miles, and I was very apologetic. He said, well, you'll need a cup of tea, having walked that far, so I'll make you a cup of tea. So I had gotten a cup of tea, but he didn't have a cup of tea, and I thought, I've put him to a lot of work here. This is, you know, I'm not doing very well. However, we got on very well, and we always get on when we meet. And I invited him to come. I told him about what we had done, but that we were looking for a teacher that we could relate to more easily, perhaps. And he came up, and he stayed. with me and my family and got to know them, and I got to know him, and we had our session with the questions and answers that he did. And it was wonderful. Everybody was, you know, so in awe of him. And I remember asking him a question. I said, what if you find yourself in difficult circumstances, but they're no fault of yours? And he said, oh no, that's not never the case. You put yourself where you are. And I thought, gosh, you know, that's a lifetime's wisdom for me. And but he was wonderful. He really was. And he came up two or three times to stay and see the group, and we got to know him. And in the end, I found that we really had a teacher now. We really had someone who we'd all been looking for. And from time to time, he sent people up to see us and say hello. And one time, Gotami came. Gotami left the movement some years ago, but in those days, she was Bhante's right-hand woman. And she came up to see us. And we said at one time, I think I said, we haven't done a puja. Would you lead us in a puja? And she did. This was still in my sitting room. And after the puja, there was silence for about 15 minutes. Everyone was so amazed by it that they just sat without saying anything. But the feeling in the room was wonderful. So we were learning to become Buddhists in this way. Quite a lot of people came to my house, and it was getting a bit crowded, and we decided that we would rent a flat in the middle of Glasgow, so that people from all round could come, not just from the West End where I was, but all round. And it became, there were men who said they would like to stay in it and they could pay some rent. And I had a full-time job and I paid some of the rent, and we were all putting in whatever we could. And there was a shrine room. So really, we were the Glasgow Buddhist Centre. And we were all very happy about that. It was all men, of course, in the community, but it was lovely to have a community. We had a centre, and Bhante came to open it. I remember giving him a massive hug when I went into the room where he was sitting, we were standing talking, and he gave me a hug back and he kissed my cheek, and I was really very happy about that. How kind of him. Lots of visitors came from London, and one of them was, let me see, Vajradhaka. Vajradhaka became my friend in the very early days of becoming a Buddhist, and he was so helpful to me. He lives in London. I'm sure you've met him or seen him or know about him. And he just helped me all the way, and was very nice in calling me the leading light in the Glasgow Centre, although that light wasn't all that strong, really. But lots of visitors came. Loka Mitra, and so on, lots and lots of them. And they came to London and they said to me, they came to Glasgow and said to me, you have to come to London because we need your help. And I said, well, it's a little bit difficult. Oh, no, you've got to come. You can leave this getting on with itself now and come to London. And I said, well, actually, I've got a husband and three children and a full-time job. I don't think I can come to London. So they put up with me saying no. because I had a lovely job in a college. I met the man who was the the head of the college. I had done a fashion show, of all things. But then we had a fashion show just the other day, didn't we? Mm-hmm. And it was to quite for the college, showing them how to buy clothes that weren't too expensive, how to use their money, and I was using the microphone and talking to them and telling them what was the girls were wearing and how much it was and so on. And he came in and said, I wonder if I could ask you something rather strange. So I said, oh, yes, what? And I thought maybe he was going to say it was far too long, that fashion show. And he said, could you teach my girls to be like the ones that you have on the platform? Sort of the way you are, communicating, that kind of thing. And I said, oh, yes, that sounds lovely. And I started it, and he paid me very well for it. And it really was the Dharma I was teaching. I was teaching them to give positive feedback, got them to be creative. They got into groups and got a dance together and danced for one another, and then the feedback was to be positive. And it was just things that were about compassion, loving, gentle, kindly. It was, and they were great. They really were great, these girls. And I enjoyed it very much. And then they asked me to do the boys, who said, first question that they had was, we'd like to talk about sex if that's all right with you. So I said, well, I think that's somebody else's. However, it really was great. And I used my training in being a teacher. Sorry, I can hardly get my the way to try to help them was to use drama. That's the word I'm trying to find. And I'd taught drama in several places. In fact, my husband and I had an art centre, which we built up, and I did the drama class, and a teenager came along to this class, and her name was Anne, and it became Parami. She was just about 14, 15, and she was wonderful, as she still is. And anyway, we had a lot of people coming to our art centre, and the Glasgow centre was really coming on and on. It was doing very well, but none of us were ordained, and I had to do with the art centre, where I did Friday nights and Saturday morning and afternoon and Sunday morning. So I had a busy life, and I asked Bhante if he could send someone up to help us run the centre. And Gotami came, and she and I became very good friends, got to know one another very well, and she was so helpful in leading meditations not she was so much better than some people. I remember my dear friend Dana Vera leading breathing, and he was very intense about it, and he said told what everyone what to do. Start just noticing your breath, and then counting after, and then counting before, and then just breathing. And he said, now we stop the breathing, and went on. And there was consternation all over the room. And then someone said, "We have to stop breathing." He said, "Oh no." So we had lots of fun as well. And Gotamate was really awfully good. And she said to me quite soon after she'd arrived, "Why have you not asked for ordination?" And I said, "Oh, me? Oh, no. Oh, not yet. No. She said, "Well, you can write to him then and ask for it." So I took her advice, and I received a letter saying, "Please consider yourself a candidate. I'm just going off for a year's just a year's retreat, a solitary retreat, and I can't do it this year, but it could be next year." So that was 1974, and that was when I was ordained. I was at Dhammadina's ordination. I'm sure many of you know Dhammadina. She's much loved by me as well as every other person. And I was at her ordination in 1973, and I met Loka Mitra there, who was very keen on going to India. Anyway, our art centre ended in rather a strange way, but we decided that we'd, this is, when I say we, it's Ian and I, my husband, that we would go to America, because Ian had met a bank manager, a bank, not manager, you know, the one at the very top, the dictator. So we went there, and he wanted us to set up art centres all over the place. But it was a huge job. We were travelling all over America to places he had said that we were interested in having them. And we'd had a difficult time before we left, and we were both a bit down in spirits. We met a lot of interesting people, and I was offered a job, the same sort of job that I was offered by Mr. Mani in the college I taught in. But we decided we couldn't do this thing. We'd need a whole lot of people. The bank man gave us a free office and a typewriter at that time, and we couldn't really get on with it, and we decided to come back. So we came back, and I went in to see the I hadn't been to the centre, the Glasgow Centre, and they moved the centre to another place, and I found that it was really people were in the living in a new flat where the new centre was. It was not central in as it had been, but it was a very nice flat and very nice shrine room and so on. And one of the men who had been one of the people who met in the group that was Glasgow Buddhist Group many, some years back, he wrote to me and said, where are you? You haven't come since you've been in America. Come back. And I went down to the shops a day or two later, and I met one of the young men I'd known before I went to America. And he said, I hear you're coming to meditate with us. And I said, well, yes, I've been asked. And he said, has no one told you yet? And I said, what? And he said, we don't want a woman meditating with us. And that was in the time when things weren't really straightforward. This place had to be to get got together, this center. A center in London was very important. There was one up in North London, but it was very small and not really appropriate. So we came here, and Bhante realized that there were a lot of women now in the movement, because there were a lot of men at the beginning, more than women. And Bhante said, now, look, you can't get into having a wife and then starting a family, because we need everyone we've got. And there weren't very many of us at that time. We've got to get this center done. I can't do it myself. We all have to work together. And you really have to leave the women alone and get on with the work that has to be done. Well, I think that's a fairly good thing to say, because this place needed a lot of help and money and all sorts of things to get it as it is now. And the men took it up as, women, please, off, avast, all that sort of, it seemed awful then, but thinking of it much later, I think they did find the women very attractive, and they had to be unkind to them, because if they were kind to them, as the women would like to be to them, they couldn't say no. So this thing arose of, you know, we don't want a woman meditating with us. It was that kind of thing. Fortunately, of course, it's gone now. But it was a difficult time for the women, really, feeling shunned. But we've all got over it, so thank goodness for that. The next, I don't want to be too long. The next place is India. Lokamitra had gone to India following Bhante's footsteps, and he took up residence in a place called Dapodi in India, and it was a huge place, miles and miles of it, and all these people were Buddhists, and they had been helped by Dr. Ambedkar to stop being called people who were untouchable. They were called untouchables because they were the lowest of the people who were Hindus. They were Brahmins, and then it went down. You had a sect, which was what you were born into. Dr. Ambedkar said to the people who were untouchables, you can stop being a Hindu and you can become a Buddhist. And over a period of time, with Bhante helping all the time, they did. became Buddhists and they lived in Dapodi. They were very it was a place where people had no money. They had the only water that came from a well that everybody had to go and get some, and there were open sewers running between the houses. They weren't really houses, they were just little huts for a whole family, hardly any room at all. But it was wonderful to go there and stay there and see these people becoming Buddhists, as I had been doing myself. Lokamitra asked me, because he wanted me to start a school. So I said, well, you know, start a school. He said, yes, Mr. Dongre is going to give us his house and we can use it as a school. He told me this before I went to India. And I went to see Bhante and I told him about Mr. Dongre, and he said, I would look into that when you get there. So I thought, oh dear, and he was right, because Mrs. Dongre was not going to let him give the house to us. He was quite a funny old man, and when I first met him, I was introduced as the lady who was coming to start the school. He knelt down at my feet and kissed this bit of my garment, and that's the one and only time that ever happened to me, and it was a very strange experience. And I put my hands out and I said, stand up. And I don't think that's what you were supposed to do, but never mind. The Lokamitra wanted the children to be educated. There was no education in Dapodi for anybody, and we would have to do it ourselves. Dapodi was just, you know, houses crunched together, in all of the areas, it was very big, and there were little areas, well, maybe with a mile's radius. People came to hear a talk by somebody. Maybe Padmasuri would be giving a talk or somebody. And Indians are not like us. There are spaces between where you're sitting. In India, it's unkind not to sit absolutely hunched with the person in front, behind, and on either side. And there were lots and lots of things like that that were common in India that I hadn't known before, and it really was a steep learning curve. Anyway, I talked to Lokamitra about the school and did some research, and without Mr. Dongre's school, his house going to be the school, we had nothing. We had no teachers, we had no money, we had nothing at all. But Lokamitra and I thought, what can we do? And I went into a lot of research. All the people I knew, I met a lot of the wives in Dapodi, who were, you know, they did all the work. The men were tops, and they were somewhere down there, hopefully scrubbing the floor. And I got to know a lot of them, and I really liked them. They were like Scottish women. It was lovely. I went to schools, and there interestingly, because I was white, quite a few people shunned me. I wanted to ask where I was. I'd got slightly lost in somewhere in the middle of Pune. And I said, could you tell me? And the woman looked at me and grabbed her child and took her away. And I thought, oh dear, that's how people feel when they're, they're black or they're so-called people who are now Buddhists but were untouchable. So it was a huge learning curve. as I said. I couldn't get any... The schools were not for local people in Dapodi. We couldn't get a building. But this little hut where everybody came to listen to talks and... I mean, even the people were... There were about five or six heads looking in the door, all standing on or kneeling on the person below, because that was the only way to find out that there were no seats left. You couldn't squeeze anybody more in. So, this place was the central place where people could meet, and I thought, because one of the things, Padmasuri and Virabhadra, they held doctor's visits for children, and the mothers brought their little, tiny little babies, and some of them were so weak they were not fed properly, and there was no food to feed them, and it was again, I'd never seen anything like that before, and they were wonderful. They really were, Padmasuri and Virabhadri. But there were other men who were there. Now, I won't go over all their names, but they were great too. They were following Bhante's teachings and helping these people. And I thought, well, we can get the place in the morning, because it was not many things took place in the morning. We could have a nursery. And some of the women who used to do some beautifully creative drawings on the step into their little house, you know, just maybe a wooden board, but it was beautiful. And so we could get some of these women to come and teach the children to do some nice work. And then it sort of took off. And they were called Balwadis. And it worked, and over the years they've grown, and there's about 17 or 18 Balwadis now. And I had a title there. I was called the Balwadi Lady. And I was so happy, because one of the young order members, a young woman, came over to London, and she came to stay with me, and she was the one who looked after all the Balwadis. So that was nice to be able to do that. So I think the time is going on. It's
no, you're fine. Carry on. Well, at least another 10 or 15 minutes.
All right, so I'll whiz through London. Sankar Devi asked me to come down and help. She was the girl who took up Bhante's call for a women's retreat centre. It was Tara Loka that came out of all of this, but she knew that I had done a lot of getting funds to help the art centre in Glasgow, and I knew how to go about it. In those days, you could actually go to the director of a big, big company, get an appointment with them and say, I'm here to get some money, if that's all right. Now you have to fill in about 10 forms and send your passport and everything. So we managed to get, in the door knocking we did, and I was training them all to door knock. We had lovely people who were volunteering to knock on the doors, and I would be somebody very difficult, and it was to keep them just going all the time. It doesn't matter what someone says to you, just smile at them and say, I'm so sorry if I've troubled you, and you know, and then I would get difficult about, you're wanting money, aren't you? And, you know, and we were, by the time we finished, we were all laughing in the bed. So we had a great time, and we did do well, and Tara Loka came to being. So Sangha Devi and I became good friends, because we worked together, And the experience that I'd had in Glasgow setting up the Arts Centre meant that she had wanted to have a big and a nice big sort of shop in central London where we could tell people about this place. But I said, well, we'll have to sell the street centre if you want to get a place in the middle of London. So she thought that was probably a very good idea, and we just got the money to come, and it started. Sangha Devi, I stayed in the community that we were the ones who were doing this, several people, and Sangha Devi said to me, why don't you come and live in London? Because Ian didn't have a job at that time, having lost the Arts Centre and gone through a very difficult time. So we did. Came to London and got a Phoenix house. Phoenix was the Deva Priya started Phoenix for people who were coming to London because this place was really lovely now and drawing people in. But there was nowhere to live, and people usually didn't have much money or any money, and it was a way of getting a place to live, because big organizations like Sanctuary had houses, but they were not actually fit for human living. However, if you didn't mind that the water might be coming in down inside the wall rather than the outside of the wall, you could have a very low rent in a place that Phoenix would get. So they were given a lot of houses, and we were given a Phoenix house, and yes, the water was coming down the inside, but it was wonderful to have it. And they asked me, the men, a couple of men who were doing it, if I could form a committee. So I had to sit on the committee, and then I became the chairman of the committee. And I've had a way of doing some things like that without knowing where I might end up. That is the, as the chairman of the meeting. However, I was happy to say yes. Then I worked with a lovely man whose name I forget for the moment, but he and I worked together in Phoenix, and we did a lot that was good. Then Chintamani said that we could, because I knew about art centres, we could have an art centre in this building that the local people, they were fine having the first floor, but there were three more floors, and they didn't want that. They wanted to let them out. So we were given the rest of it, and it was a peppercorn rent, and that's how the Art Centre, the London Buddhist Art Centre, started. And again, we had a meeting of people who wanted to be involved, and they all asked me if I would be the head of it, or the chair it, and it was me at that time, and they were all men, and they used to fight with each other. You can't say things like that. That's ridiculous. What I think, you know, and. I said to Bhante when I saw him the next time, Bhante, the men are always fighting with each other. What's wrong? Is it because it's just me? He said, no, it's got nothing to do with you. Men are, they do this sort of thing. They're competitive. And it was one of the best bits of advice I ever had. I didn't pay any attention. One or two of them, but I would sit at the top of the table, Chintamani would sit at the other end of the table, and the people who were squabbling, he put a hand on one, if he wasn't doing any squabbling himself, he would put a hand on the person's arm, and I would put a hand on the person's arm, and that helped to get all the work done instead of everybody trying to compete. So we ran that really rather well. Then I and I'm going to finish soon now. The other thing that I got involved in, I'm at the moment the chairman of the Globetown Community Project, Shraddha Pushpa, who's wonderful in it, and all the lovely people who are in it, and we do that from the Art Centre. I started to think about, if men are going to push women away, we need a voice. And got together with Srivati and who else, I wrote their names down, Vajrapushpa, Kalyana Prabhupada, and we started Dakini, which was the first women's magazine, Buddhist magazine, and it was really very good. We realized after a while that Dakini was not a good word to use in India, because they were in, the ladies of the night were called Dakinis. We had chosen rather a difficult name, so we changed it to another name, and it was called, let me show you what it was called. Lotus Realm, a new voice for Buddhist women. And that's Sangha Devi there. She was a preceptor by that time. And this was 2001. And it was wonderful. It really was wonderful. But we just couldn't keep the money going to keep it going. So we had to stop doing it. I've got a few of these, and if anybody would like to have a look at it, maybe they could find a way of having some another voice for Buddhist women. So, these are some of the things that I've done in the time that, since the time that I heard Bhante's voice. He just got me, and I've stayed got ever since. I love to go and see him, and we're both old. Although he says old, I said to him, "What if you don't think 80 is old, what is old?" And he said, "The hundreds, of course." So you've a long way to go. So, thank you very much.